Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. If you love great games and a little extra excitement to your day, I got something fun for you. Chumba Casino and I have teamed up to create an exclusive online social casino game. It's called Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's fun and free to play, just like all your favorites from Chumba Casino. And every spin brings 10,000 ways to keep the good times going. Check it out and play for free today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Saving money on everything for your next project, now at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of bagged concrete and mortar mixes. Whether you're pouring a walkway, concrete slab, or setting a post, we have the right product at the best price to complete your project. Shop our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Saving money on everything for your next project. Now at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of bagged concrete and mortar mixes. Whether you're pouring a walkway, concrete slab, or setting a post, we have the right product at the best price to complete your project. Shop our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
This is The Big Breakdown. A long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The prosecutor in the Lindsay Clancy trial asked Patrick Clancy on the stand to describe his children, and he had to stop and take a breath before he could get through it. Cora was into princesses. She had lots of friends. She just liked taking care of people. Dawson liked trucks and firefighters and Paw Patrol. Callan was 8 months old, and his father told the courtroom he was just a happy baby. Patrick Clancy said all of that out loud in Plymouth Superior Court, the witness stand, as a witness for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. His former wife sat at the defense table across the room sobbing. Then the same prosecutor picked up a plastic bag full of that woman's pill bottles and asked him whether he knew how many pills were missing. Lindsay Clancy is charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder in the deaths of Cora Dawson and Callan in the family's home in Duxbury on January 24th of 2023. She doesn't dispute that she killed them. Her attorney, Kevin Reddington, said so in his opening statement in front of the jury on the record. So this isn't a case about who did it. It's a case about whether she can be held criminally responsible for doing it, which is a different question and a much harder one. If the jury finds she wasn't criminally responsible, she doesn't walk out the front door of that courthouse. She goes to a state mental hospital facility, or back to one, really, and doctors decide periodically whether she's ever safe to leave. That's where she wants to be. That's what she's requested all along. To be locked in a mental facility for the rest of her life. 12 women and 6 men are going to make that decision. The judge told them to plan on 6 to 8 weeks in a witness list running to nearly 200 names. Assistant District Attorney Shannon Buckingham opened by telling those jurors exactly what kind of person she believes they're looking at. Controlling, meticulous, manipulative, not a woman in the throes of psychosis, Buckingham said, but a woman who acted intentionally, rationally, and swiftly, despite there being no actual evidence for that. Then she told those jurors one more thing. This isn't a public debate about women's mental health and how the medical system treats women, she said. This case is about this defendant. No, it's actually 1,000% about that, because the actions that defendant took are directly corresponding, connected, related to, connected at the hip to women's mental health and how the medical system treated this specific woman and countless others out there. So again, you're wrong on that little factor. Miss Prosecutor. There's a number Patrick Clancy gave investigators that explains why he later hired a lawyer and sued his wife's doctors. The Commonwealth's very first witness was the father of the three children. Prosecutor Jennifer Sprague walked him through the marriage, the three pregnancies, the maternity leaves, the babysitters, and the anxiety that showed up every time Lindsay had to go back to her job as a labor and delivery nurse. Then Sprague entered a bag holding 9 prescription bottles into evidence and started reading him the counts. 7 pills gone from Zoloft prescription filled in September of 22, 6 out of 30 gone from an Ativan prescription filled in October of 26, and a bottle with 2 pills gone, a bottle with 3, a bottle nobody had opened at all. Then there were a lot of pills prescribed, the prosecutor said, but not a lot of pills taken, correct? He answered no. I think the context is important. He pointed out there had been dosage adjustments made. On the rest of it, he was blunt. He wasn't keeping track of the number of pills taken out of each bottle. The argument the state is making with that bag is straightforward enough. You can't blame the medication for what happened if you weren't swallowing the medication. But she was taking the medication, not as prescribed. I don't know that helps your argument of her being in control if she's taking medication, on and off medication, having been misdiagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder when she was really suffering from bipolar 1 and postpartum psychosis. And then we're mixing a cocktail of medicines willy-nilly in the mix from a brain that is telling her, don't take this, and hearing voices saying, kill your children. You're not going to get exactly the greatest decision-making power going on here. And you're the one that has to argue that she had great decision-making power here. What are you arguing, state? What are you arguing? But look at what's actually in the bag. 9 bottles came out of roughly 4 months. They were written by more than one prescriber, and almost nothing was gone out of some of them. That doesn't show you a patient ignoring her doctor. It shows you a lot of prescriptions going out the door and nobody adding them up. Her husband wasn't counting pills because it never occurred to him that counting pills was his job. He assumed somebody with a license was doing that. Both of these lawyers are going to want that bag in front of the jury during closing arguments, and they're going to be pointing at the same 9 bottles for opposite reasons. The Commonwealth isn't improvising here. They walked in with a clock. At 4:02 in the afternoon on January 24th, 23, according to court documents prosecutors have filed, Lindsay Clancy searched her home or her phone for kids' Miralax. 11 minutes later, she searched takeout, 3V, a reference to 3V, a restaurant in Plymouth. Then prosecutors say she opened Apple Maps and calculated how long the drive from the house in Duxbury to that restaurant would take. At 4:47, she called a CVS in Kingston and asked whether they had children's Miralax in stock. They didn't. The manager who took the call later told investigators she didn't slow her words and didn't sound impaired in any way. And you know what? People going through psychosis don't! They don't sound that way. That's what the movies tell you. That's what a bullshit attorney tells you who wants you to think one way. Well, were they sounding impaired? No, people with active psychosis, a lot of times they look and sound completely fucking normal. That's how they're able to pull off the shit they're able to pull off, and nobody can tell until it's too late. And she wasn't dressed like a clown and singing show tunes either. Again, I mean, it's rather just sad that we're in this state that people think that someone in a state of psychosis is going to be slurring their words and actively acting impaired. If you're like, well, they wouldn't, you have a lot to learn about psychosis then. You know, there was a point in my life before I educated myself on some of this where I probably would have thought the same thing. Like, well, she's not acting crazy. You don't know what acting crazy is like. Acting crazy is not the clown sideshow that folks think it might be. Oh, if it only was, trust me, we'd be able to like shut it down a lot quicker. Unfortunately, crazy is insidious. Psychosis can be insidious, meaning you don't know it's there until it's too late. At 4:53, she texted the basement. Any chance you want to do takeout from 3V? I didn't cook anything. It's been a long day. Patrick testified they'd eaten at 3V before, but had never once ordered takeout from it. Woo, that's a big point. When you're arguing about the frequency of takeout and you're the prosecution, you don't have much of a case. When they did takeout, he said it came from one of two places closer to the house, usually. Buckingham told the jury he left around 5:15 to pick up the food and grab the medicine at CVS for Cora and then delivered the line. She wants those 18 people carrying around for the next 2 months. That's when the clock starts, ladies and gentlemen. That's when the clock starts, ladies and gentlemen. It goes further than the clock. He testified that at a wedding in New Hampshire in September of 2022, Lindsay told him she was thinking about asking a doctor for Zoloft. The prosecutor established that she had already had the prescription filled the day before the conversation happened. And he only learned that later. There's also an item in the browsing history of a tablet the two of them shared dated August of 2022, months before any of these prescriptions existed. Said he didn't recall clicking it. That's the premeditation case. That she wanted to get Zoloft and she told her husband, I'm thinking about asking a doctor for it. But she already asked her doctor for it. Okay. And she was being dishonest. She was being scared of talking about it out loud. She was afraid of being judged at that moment in time for wanting. Yeah, that's pretty fucking normal for a lot of people. Unfortunately. And people in these sort of states of mind, they're rather sensitive to judgment. And then things get held back. So I don't know what they're trying to prove there, but I guess it's probably, oh, she was untruthful or I don't know. I'm sure you could probably find a lots of ways people are untruthful in their relationships. The state got one more thing out of Patrick that afternoon. It was a single sentence, and both of the lawyers are going to fight over it until the jury goes out. The other half of Buckingham's opening was basically a slideshow. She showed the jury photographs and video of a woman who looked like she was doing fine. The Museum of Science, a water park down on Cape Cod, cutting down a Christmas tree in November, Cora's fifth birthday party at a place in Plymouth, text threads full of pictures of kids playing in the snow. On direct examination under the state's own questions, Patrick agreed that Lindsay was always able to interact with her children, including at the museum. This isn't some mysterious wonderment that's going on here. Then the same prosecutor asked the same man about Thanksgiving at his sister's house. He said she was in rough shape. She wasn't talking much, low energy, really depressed. He remembered his sister-in-law giving her a big hug when she walked out the door. Both of those answers came out of the same man on the same day, and neither one is a lie. The trouble with using she looked fine as proof of anything is that she looked fine to everybody. She looked fine at the tree farm. She looked fine in the text messages. And she looked fine, apparently, to a rotating cast of licensed professionals who kept writing prescriptions. A photograph of a woman going down a slide with her daughter proves that she went down a slide with her daughter. It's not a psychiatric evaluation, and it never was. So both sides get the bag. The state holds it up and sees a woman who wouldn't take her medicine. The defense holds up that same bag and sees prescriptions written by people who weren't talking to each other. It's the same 9 bottles either way. In January 2026, Patrick Clancy filed a wrongful death and malpractice complaint in Norfolk Superior Court against his wife's psychiatrist, her nurse practitioner, and the two practices that employed them. That complaint says her appointments with the psychiatrist ran 17 minutes each. That isn't the intake visit. That's the standing appointment. It also alleges those visits were video calls and that the psychiatrist never once sat in a room with her. The complaint describes a 10-minute follow-up call in January that ended with another prescription. It describes a 17-minute appointment after that and another prescription. And it says her final appointment ran 17 minutes on January 23rd, 2023, and ended with her dosage going up. The next day, all three of her children were dead. According to the same filing, across 4 months of roughly a dozen prescriptions, nobody ever ordered a blood test to see how her body was actually metabolizing any of it. Those are allegations in a lawsuit, not findings. The providers haven't conceded them, and none of it has been tested in front of a jury, but it's why a man who lost all three of his kids went out and sued the people who were supposed to be treating their mother. He gave a different number from the witness stand. He testified that he called Lindsay's parents and asked them to come up, and that he asked his own wife who her doctor even was because he was concerned. She'd been prescribed 10 different medications in just over 2 months. He said it didn't make sense to him. He works in tech. He was running his job out of a finished basement with three kids over his head, and he's the one who noticed. He noticed the telehealth appointments were quick, and there wasn't a lot of attention being paid. So when the next one was scheduled remotely, he refused. It has to be in person, he told her. He's the one who handed the district attorney's office a printout form from CVS listing every prescription she filed from September through January. He had a second bag of her discontinued medications riding around in the console of his truck because a nurse practitioner told him a police station would dispose of them and he never got around to dropping them off. He also described what happened every time she went looking for help. In November, she went roughly 48 hours without sleeping, developed heart palpitations, and drove herself to South Shore Hospital. She switched providers looking for someone who specialized in prenatal care or perinatal care. The specialist she found left the office after 4 or 5 days by his count, and she was handed to a nurse practitioner. In December, he took her to the emergency department at Mass General. She enrolled in a day program for women and infants and showed up as scheduled, and the providers there sent her home and told him the program wasn't right for her. On New Year's Eve, they went back to Mass General, and she was moved to another hospital at 3 o'clock in the morning. So anybody who's like, well, she didn't put in the work, doesn't know what the F they're talking about. She spent 5 days there in early January. He testified he wasn't getting updates. The prosecutor asked him about group sessions she attended. Sessions she declined in a request to be discharged early so she could make Cora's birthday party. He didn't know about any of it. Everything he knew about his wife's psychiatric care, he learned from his wife. Sprague asked whether insurance had given them any trouble over that hospital stay. He said he wasn't aware of any issue. Then he added a sentence nobody had asked him for. It wouldn't have cared. I wouldn't have cared either, he said. I would have paid anything, he said. Money was never the problem. He'd set aside a fund so she could take extra leave whenever she needed it. The problem was that 13 separate prescriptions by the defense's count went out from psychiatrists, nurse practitioners, emergency room doctors, and inpatient staff, and her own civil suit alleges that none of them ever had the complete picture. Buckingham told that jury this case was about this defendant, not about how the medical system treats women. Then her office spent that afternoon walking its first witness through 4 months of how the medical system treated a woman. These are great prosecutors, aren't they? Jesus Christ. The judge ended the day early, right as prosecutors looked ready to play the 911 call Patrick made when he got home. That's where his testimony resumes. The Commonwealth will walk him through what he found in that house in the same room as the woman he was married to. You can't stand up in front of a jury, declare a subject off limits, and then build your entire afternoon out of it. The Plymouth County District Attorney's Office picked a frame the evidence won't carry, and they picked it in front of 12 women who are going to spend the next 2 months hearing about prescription counts and 7-minute appointments. And that sentence the state pulled out of him? He said his wife seemed to be having one of her best days. The Commonwealth will argue that's a woman thinking clearly and making a choice. The defense will argue that's the entire problem, that this illness doesn't arrive with a warning label attached. 2 months of expert testimony are going to turn on one sentence spoken by a man who loved every single person in that house. The last thing those jurors hear before they went home was Patrick Clancy describing the end of an ordinary evening. He came up from the basement, held Kellen for a minute, and rocked him on his knees. Dawson was on the couch eating chicken nuggets out of a bowl. He kissed Cora on the head, and he told them he'd be right back. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We will continue to break this down as it continues to go on. If you want to hear audio of the trial every day, we got it for you on our podcast channel. We welcome you to check that out. The link is right there if you're watching us on YouTube. Go check out the podcast, press subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. That link will take you to a link tree that will take you to whatever podcast platform you use, and you can get our podcasts there, and you can take us with you on the go. So please do check that out there. We do appreciate that. And you can listen to the trial every day. Bring you the audio as it happens. Until next time, my name's Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
And let's go over to another case that's going on right now in trial. Lindsay Clancy's trial opened in Plymouth Superior Court on the argument that she was so deep in postpartum psychosis and so badly over-medicated that she cannot be held criminally responsible for the deaths of Cora Dawson and Callan, her three children. Prosecutors conceded that she had mental health problems, but told jurors she was not in the throes of psychosis. That after 4 months of treatment, she didn't fully commit to it. She made deliberate choices, so it's all her fault. We've now seen opening statements from both sides. Patrick Clancy has been on the stand as of our recording of this. Her ex-husband testifying that hours before the children died, she was outside building a snowman with them. She was having one of her best days, he said. Prosecutors put photos of a woman functioning normally in front of a jury. Everybody hears that and decides the argument is over, or at least a lot of people do. Doesn't a good afternoon fit psychosis rather than rule it out? And isn't the state's entire opening built on jurors not knowing that? Siobhan Scott is with a psychotherapist and author to help break all this down. I think the biggest battle here seems to be people's understanding of psychosis. It's not someone necessarily sitting in the corner, rocking and shaking and hitting their head against a wall, although allegedly she was doing that, according to her parents as well. Yeah. It certainly can be that, but can also be building a snowman with your kids before you kill them, can it?
Yeah, because you really, you know, observing this external behavior, you don't know what was going on internally. And some people, when psychotic, can understand that they are trying to play normal. They want to be normal, but mm-hmm. that doesn't mean that they're not truly inside having delusional thinking going on. And we see that all the time with folks who have a lot of delusional thinking and, you know, meets the criteria for psychosis. I've seen practicing MDs who had psychotic thinking and delusional thinking, but they were still practicing medicine, mm-hmm. you know, and doing a reasonably competent job until they weren't at some point. But, you know, so far, this is going to be a long trial. I've got 6 pages of notes just from the first day. And I am so eager to hear from the people who were providing treatment and what their diagnosis was in the beginning and then how it progressed and how that timeline connects with the symptoms that she was having. Because, you know, looking at my notes, there were just pivot points where, you know, it looked like initially it was postpartum anxiety and depression. And they were giving medications for that that, you know, did not look completely unreasonable until just a couple weeks after starting the Zoloft, she was getting worse. Mm-hmm. And there were definitely distinct points where they were layering on the benzodiazepines. They were trying to treat the anxiety. I mean, I can look at the list of meds that, you know, we've been seeing so far, and I don't know how thorough and complete that is. But from the Zoloft and then a couple weeks later, unable to sleep, Ativan and Benadryl, why weren't we looking? Could the Zoloft be activating a bipolar condition, activating a mania there? And that did not appear to be looked at. Now, when we get into adding trazodone, another thing that they add for sleep, it's an old antidepressant, causes drowsiness. So why wasn't, that was November 16th, why wasn't reassessing the diagnosis looked at then? Is this indicated in somebody's treatment notes that they were still looking at anxiety and depression? They weren't looking at psychosis. That's a treatment failure. Escalating symptoms the end of November. They added more antidepressant. They added Prozac. They were treating symptoms at that point, trying another SSRI, which can also cause manic symptoms to escalate, bipolar symptoms, psychotic symptoms, throwing on Ambien for sleep, Remeron, which is sedating for sleep, Klonopin, another benzodiazepine. So they were trying to calm them down, but they weren't looking at what they needed to be considering. They weren't getting a good differential diagnosis. Late December, they bumped it up to Seroquel, which is an antipsychotic. Okay, what was the justification for that? Because clearly somebody was thinking psychosis at that point. Which provider was it? What did they say in their notes? But she didn't have a good response to the Seroquel. She was getting worse. So at that point, why wasn't hospitalization being looked at sooner? Because again, you look at the whole picture. This is a woman responsible for three little kids. You don't want her in a psychotic state. So where were the gaps? Where were the treatment failures? At some point when she was at McLean Psychiatric Hospital, medication changes again. What diagnosis were they actually treating? And it wasn't until later that they added, okay, it was in early January, they added lamotrigine, also called Lamictal. Lamotrigine is the generic name. That is a specific medication for bipolar disorder. What was the dosage? How was that being monitored? And so we just still, with what was going on clinically, there's so much information missing. And that's the data that I'm really interested in seeing here. Because again, with effective treatment, if she had been hospitalized for 30 days, I don't think these murders would have happened, but its diagnosis is ever evolving. It's difficult when you just see somebody for one visit, you get a snapshot. That first visit, you have to give some kind of diagnosis, right? But it's provisional. You don't know enough. You're not speaking with the family. What are they seeing? And what was she saying? You know, we've talked about these visits were very brief. Were they monitoring? Were they tracking really her thinking process? Were they asking the right questions to get into? You can't just say client is depressed, client is anxious. You have to say as evidenced by. When I'm doing work with people, I quote them. I quote them throughout the session because I want to know what are they saying? What are they thinking? I can ask more questions about, okay, you're feeling sad. Tell me more about that. What are you sad about? You know, were they going to that depth? Were they really paying attention to this? Because as you said, this is such a rare condition. They don't see it. Some of them may have never seen postpartum psychosis before. Yeah. So they weren't thinking bipolar one disorder. But the other thoughts that came to me, which would fit a lot with what we know so far, would be what's called a mixed episode. And this is a very scary thing, and it's hell for people to experience. A mixed state means you're having severe depression along with the mania at the same time. And it's like your nervous system is like a car where the brake is being slammed on, That's the depressed piece. And then you've got the accelerator being slammed at the same time. So it's incredibly uncomfortable. The symptoms: depression, anxiety, racing thoughts, severe insomnia, agitation with delusions and hallucinations. And that's a very serious thing. And, you know, just from what we know now, I could be completely off on this, but it looks like she was having a mixed state. And the clinicians, at least early on, some of them were confused about that. They weren't recognizing it.
It's incredibly complex, Siobhan. Wow. Thank you so much for that. Bringing the science behind what's going on really helps explain what I'm seeing in the courtroom. And so here's my challenge for people that are on the side of the prosecution that says she had intent, she wanted to kill her kids, that's it. Watch the courtroom, and then I want you to sit there. Just observe, and you can even turn the sound off. And when you just watch her with her lawyer, and when you hear Siobhan go through the chaos of medications and what was going on, and even Patrick this morning testified that he was never told, they were never told to remove the kids from her. She also testified that she never said she had stated that she was going to do harm to these kids. And then I want you, as you're watching her completely collapse, watching the people around her, watching her attorney hold her hand as she is completely collapsed. I've never seen anyone collapse in a courtroom like this before. I want you then go and pull up videos on YouTube and watch people like Corey Richens, Lori Day Belvallo. You pick it. You pick any of these, Brian Koberger, who killed four people. Pick any of these people and watch them, Donna Adelson, and watch her. And then you're going to see that the soup of chaos that was going on chemically with her might have been the cause and not premeditation. People that act like that in a courtroom, she is a deviation from the norm of absolutely every single guilty person that was premeditated in doing a heinous thing against three kids or any other human being, let alone three kids. And I know it's horrendous to watch. This is the most horrendous thing I've ever seen in my entire life. It is so emotionally draining to watch. But if you can stomach it, I challenge you to do it. Keep an open mind and just keep an open mind.
Mm-hmm. Siobhan, what do you say to the prosecution is saying, well, look at this bag of prescriptions. Do you know how many she didn't take? And it looks like there were some she was taking as directed. There were some she was not taking as directed. So you have someone who already is coming in with a broken brain. There's a problem going on here. And then we're like, she's not following instructions. Yeah, that kind of comes along with the territory of someone who's already going through this sort of thing. What's your response to that from a psychological standpoint of, number one, getting people to take their meds, which can be a headache in itself, or to put it lightly, but more so someone who's in this state, she's being taken from this drug to that drug, some are working, some are not working, some take time to work, and then getting off of others, you're dealing with the withdrawals, I'm sure, of yeah. some of these while being on them, other ones. I mean, what's your response to the simplicity of the prosecution going, well, she didn't take all of her medicine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's simplicity is the right word, and ignorance. You know, if yeah. somebody starts a medication and they feel worse, they tend to say, okay, I took it for a week. I took 7 days of Zoloft. I'm feeling worse. Mm-hmm. She also had anxiety around breastfeeding, which I've seen with many mothers who have postpartum depression. They're prescribed an antidepressant. Sometimes they take it, but then they get frightened. Is this going to harm the baby? And they stop. And the other piece is, if you're having psychosis, which she clearly was, you're not thinking real clearly. And yeah. you're not able to make the kind of educated decision that you would make if you were in your right mind. And she wasn't in her right mind. And then having to change providers for reasons that made perfect sense. You know, when people are seeing one provider, they're getting worse, they're getting worse, they're getting worse. The medication they're giving isn't helping. They look for a different provider. We tell people to do that. You know, if you feel like you're not being listened to, it's not getting better, you need to see somebody else. So I don't see anything that confuses me with that.
How often, I mean, obviously this is kind of more of an extreme case where you have the children that have died, but we see cases every single day of women who end their own lives themselves and not necessarily the lives of their children as they're going through the hell of postpartum depression or in rarer cases, postpartum psychosis. We don't hear their full stories. We don't hear it litigated in a courtroom. We don't hear it on national coverage. We don't talk because we're unaware of it. But from a clinical standpoint, from behind the scenes, behind the curtain, how often, in your opinion, are women being failed by the medical system and the mental health system every single day where it ends in tragedy? Maybe not where the three kids die, but where the mom doesn't make it through because of the lack of oversight, the whatever the hell went wrong here. And there seems to be a cornucopia of things that went wrong in this case. Is this an odd one off to the side, or are more women in our country experiencing this sort of cattle call, if you will, through the system and being treated exactly like that and not like a human being that needs intimate attention, deep attention to their mental health, and not just here's some pills, move on. I have another telehealth appointment to get to in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. That is very much a problem. I talk to women all the time going through menopause, having postpartum concerns, that they just don't feel that they're taken seriously, that they're not listened to. And part of this is systemic, that people, providers don't have enough time. You know, are they getting a 10 or 15 minute telehealth visit? Nobody is really going deep enough into what they're experiencing. They're isolated often. They don't have enough support. And I do think that it's more of a female problem. I think we've got quite a bit of research about that, which is why most research studies, medical research studies, are done on men. They haven't traditionally been done on women. And women have a different neurohormonal system. And I think we need to do a lot better with that.
That's horrifying. Just that fact is horrifying, that they're more done on men than women.
Yes. Yes.
And it's 2026. And I feel like that should be like something that we're realizing in like 1964. Like maybe we should do more of a balance instead of 2026. Like really? Really? God. Mm-hmm. Robin?
No, I'm sorry. I was responding on the text strings. Because basically, I know it's such a big case for everyone involved, because there's a lot of emotions running behind it. So I was just trying to keep to the facts and helping people with the facts of understanding. They're claiming responsibility for her killing her kids. That's not at issue here. The actual statute that they're putting forward, her and her lawyer putting forward, is that it's pursuing a lack of criminal responsibility defense. That's what they're trying to do. If they're successful at that, sentencing would entail, most likely, it really depends on the periodic evaluations, but a life behind bars.
Yeah.
And so it's just what kind of life behind bars that is. Is she going to be put in with, if she's found guilty of premeditation, killing of her kids, then it's going to be a life behind bars without that, where she's going to be in general population as you know, paralyzed individual from the waist down, as opposed to a life behind bars as someone paralyzed from the waist down and getting the therapeutic treatment for her condition. So it's still a life behind bars.
Yes.
And so it's just the argument here that prosecution is making is premeditation, that she was in her right mind and was completely witting of what she was doing. And defense is saying she wasn't because of this. And so it's still, I know people are getting wrapped. She's not getting away on anything forever, because she says, I did it. And so what we are just talking about is what caused the I did it.
Yeah. And a locked forensic mental health facility. I used to be, one of my jobs, the person that goes in and evaluates who's ready to get out and who's not. And most of the time, they never got out. And these are not, it's not Club Med, right? It is basically just a prison where more treatment is provided.
Thank you so much for your context on that. And of course, you've been there and done that.
Mm-hmm. Understanding this is not excusing this. And I think that's the biggest thing that that people wrestle with. They think that if I understand this, I'm excusing it. No, if you understand this, you're doing more help so we can help more people not be in this situation in the future. The more we pretend that this is some sort of witchery that's going on and that you should be burned at the stake does nothing for understanding mental health and helping people in the future. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and for you to give us your thoughts. We'll continue our conversation there. And of course, we'll continue to cover it as this trial continues on. Siobhan's book, Nightbird, I highly suggest you go get
Please
this.
Do.
It's available wherever you get books or audiobooks. Go and check it out. And Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me. It's available also wherever you get books and audiobooks. Go check it out. Leave a review on Amazon. Also greatly appreciated. All right, that's going to wrap up today's episode. Thank you guys so much. Until next time, for Todd, for Robin, for Siobhan, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Save big money on your summer project at Menards. Transform your garage with rock-solid floor coatings. Complete your project with a showroom-quality finish in 1 weekend. A one-car kit covers up to 250 square feet. Get everything you need to complete your project with rock-solid floor coatings. Our knowledgeable team is ready to help bring your dreams to life, 1 gallon at a time. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Ryan Seacrest here. Every great barbecue has one secret ingredient. Patience. You do a little, and you wait a little. And while your dinner does its thing, you got a few minutes to yourself, right? Well, kick back with a little Chumba Casino. A flip and a spin. Who knows? Maybe even a login bonus. It is the perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.